Accession number 29234, reel number 2.
Television. Every now and again it cuts out.
Oh, I know. It's so annoying.
Oh.
Yes.
Sometimes.
So this is Jill Monk and it's reel 2. Yes, it's very interesting you saying about, you know, being a 16-year-old girl and doing these sort of runs and, well, really spying, weren't you, in the countryside?
Well, I think what you've got to realise is that we were really different people from the 16-year-olds of today. We didn't have the amusements, we didn't have the television, we didn't have the clubbing and all that sort of thing. We didn't have central heating. We had one fire going in the house during the war, and it was a job to find the fuel for that. Luckily, a lot of branches came off oak trees and got sawn up. But it was, things were very short, and food was short. We were very rationed. When you think of the minute amount of butter and marge we were allowed, and a tiny bit of cheese and a couple of rashers of bacon. We again were lucky, we kept some hens and we kept goats, so we had extra milk and I made butter. We kept a pig, we got a ration for that. And I think half the pig had to go to whatever the central depot was and we had half of it. But that all helped out. When I was working on the farms, I got an extra ration of cheese, which was a great help. But, it, you know, I don't think people today can realise what it was like and what our attitude to the world was. King and country meant a lot to us in those days. There was none of this snide shows on, well, radio as it was in those days, belittling decent standards. There wasn't the out-and-out full frontal sex. That was all very much hush-hush, and I think, quite honestly, I think we were much nicer people. We hadn't the material things. We made our own amusements. And as I say, we had respect for our elders and betters. And so it seemed quite normal to do something. It was, you know, it was war work. And whatever else one was going to do, one was going to help win the war.
It also sounds, from what you've said about your early childhood, that you were a very independent child.
Oh, still am. Haven't altered in 80 years.
Don't. Yeah, so this was right through you, wasn't it?
Yes.
You know,
very much
in character.
Yes, I think my mother had a certain amount of it, because her family, we were big wood merchants in Great Yarmouth, and she was the youngest and spoilt, as the rest of them said, as my brother and sister said of me. Her father sometimes used to take her out when he was driving and would let her sort of sit between his knees and hold the reins. And she had an urge to have something to do with horses, and she would try and creep round to the stables, and the groom would sit her up on one of the carriage horses in the stable, you see. And then I think in those days horses were taken out to have a drink of water. They didn't have a bucket in the stable, so the horse was untied and taken out to have a drink with her still sitting on it. And it was a very short step to him putting a saddle on the horse and letting her ride it up the road. And eventually her cover was blown. One of the neighbours saw her racing the trams on the South Town Road. And the stables were out of bounds. She had her skirt up round her waist, and all her bloomers showing. And my grandmother on my father's side was an equally independent lady. She brought up a large family virtually single-handed because both the grandfathers died in their 40s. And Granny Holman was a great one for having a driving horse, and she wanted a decent horse. She didn't want a nice, quiet lady's horse. And she also refused to drive a four-wheeler, which was considered the safe thing for ladies in those days. She had a high-wheeled gig, which was very fast indeed. And that wasn't just the horse. Anyway, one of the neighbours came to Grandfather one day, apparently, and said, you know, you really must get a safer vehicle for your wife. I saw her nearly have a serious accident the other day. I swear there wasn't 6 inches between the hubs of her vehicle and the next door carriage. Says Grandad, I don't worry until it's less than an inch.
So you come from a long line then?
Yes.
Very independent. Yes. And good horsewomen. This whole issue of the auxiliaries, could I examine that? Could I get you to tell me about this? Was there a genuine fear of invasion?
Oh, yes.
In this country?
Yes.
And when did this come about? Would this have been Dunkirk time or before?
I think it was always at the back of one's mind because we'd been disarming for so long. And, of course, it came out very quickly that the Germans had been arming away quite happily in secret. And they'd got a huge air force of modern planes, whereas we'd got Tiger Moths and Gloucester Gladiators and, you know, dear old planes that would stay alive, would stay aloft, whatever you did with them, but they weren't exactly battle planes. And although there were planes like Hurricane and Spitfire in the making, we weren't ready to repel a German invasion. And it was always felt that if Hitler did make up his mind, there was really nothing to stop him. I was amazed to see that the beginning of that film that I was on the end of, to realise what provisions had been made to slow down an invasion, because they couldn't stop it. But the incredible things that they'd done all along the coast and inland to slow down the troops until we could mobilise our own smaller troops to repel them. And I was also amazed that both Germany and this country, having studied all this, realised that, in fact, the Germans would have been thrown out. It takes a bit of believing because we thought, you know, we were there, thought that we had nothing to stop them. But in fact, there was, if you've studied that film, you'll see there were the most incredible collection of tank traps and guard posts and great concrete blocks, ditches, dikes, you know, you name it. There was everything you can think of which in themselves wouldn't have stopped an invasion, but they would have slowed it down, they would have prevented the tanks from being as effective as they had been on the continent. And we were, in fact, much better prepared to stop an invasion. But we didn't know that at the time. I didn't know what... There were one or two roadblocks down here. I remember one at Ingworth. There was a pillbox disguised as a straw stack. And there was a sort of big tree trunk fastened at one end and on a wheel the other end to be wheeled out, and some barbed wire. Well, I mean, all the tanks would have done was to have gone round it. You know, we really used to rather laugh at it, ruefully. But in point of fact, there was a lot more. I think the spies in Germany before the war had discovered where the invasion plan was to be, and in point of fact, the Germans can't have realised just how easy Norfolk and Suffolk would have been to invade. They'd made all their plans for the south. But, so, actually, our plans in this part of the country were very Heath Robinson and very haphazard.
So, you started your work when, am I right in thinking in 1942, would it have been, when you left Cheltenham, or were you still at Cheltenham?
No, I was still at Cheltenham. In the holidays. I forget which year it was, but I know, you know, John Collings said, you know, I could be very useful with the horses. I think he had more because he was keen on horses and he liked coming over to ride Monarch.
So would it have been about 1940 then, the time after Dunkirk, about that
yes.
time? Would it? You would have been very young at that stage, yes. weren't you? 14,
yes.
14? Yes.
14 yes, it years. Was.
Yes, I suppose, as you said earlier, no one would.
14, 15.
A
no.
On horseback. No. How about this issue of secrecy, though, and trusting someone as young as yourself? Being in a boarding school like Cheltenham, I imagine there was a lot of chat with girls and the sort of girls' stories. What you were doing was very exciting. Was it ever tempting to tell your friends what you were doing?
Never thought about it. Such a completely different environment. We did have one raid when we were in our air raid shelter, which was in an inside passage of a reinforced concrete boarding house. And one bomb dropped one side of us and one bomb dropped the other side of us and then straight through one of the boarding houses, which the government hadn't derequisitioned, because they requisitioned the whole of the college and all the boarding houses to take the government to. And the principal, Miss Popham, had a fortnight to find accommodation for 900 girls and 100 staff. My year and the year below us went up to Lilleshall Hall in Shropshire. Some of them went to Brockhampton, some to Seven Springs House. I forget the others, but they took over various different years, were accommodated in various different big country houses. Sort of, we were the furthest out. We were about just over 70 miles from Cheltenham. And Miss Popham used to drive up. I think she came once a week to make sure everything was going all right. And she would go the rounds, have a meal with us, talk to us all, and then back again, and then she'd be going round one of the others. And then eventually the government decided that they, I think they thought Cheltenham was probably too vulnerable. So they started giving it back. They gave back two boarding houses, which were these two reinforced concrete ones, St Austin's and St Helens. St Helens was the day girls' house, and their dining room was sort of in the middle part of the house. We were all boarders in St Austin's. And they gradually gave back more of the houses, but this particular one, Bays Hill House, they hadn't given back. And when we went down to college in the morning, there was Bays Hill House, and a bomb had gone straight through the middle of it. And a few days later, when Miss Popham came onto the stage in the Princess Hall for prayers, "Ladies, I have some news for you. Bays Hill House has been derequisitioned by the government. Needless to say, I have informed the government that I am not prepared to accept it in its present condition." And she had a very naughty little smile that sort of cocked up one side of her mouth, you know. And of course there was hoots of joy all round the Princess Hall. "Quiet, ladies. It is not a subject for hilarity."
Yes, that must have been an experience in itself. Yes. Being at Cheltenham at that time.
Yes, because Cheltenham was believed to be, you know, well, that's why the government didn't get to go there, because the Germans would never get there. But of course they had gone, it was a hit and run raid. They'd gone for the Gloucester aircraft factories, and this one plane had obviously got driven off and dumped its bombs on the way home.
And did the school manage to keep its identity during this time of dispersal? Yes. Did you all feel, you know, Cheltenham ladies?
Yes. But, yes, yes. Yes, Miss Popham was a marvellous person. I don't think anybody's ever realised just what a fantastic person she was. We all thought the world of her. Yeah, there's the odd girl who said, "Oh, Popeye this and Popeye that," you know. But the large majority of us, you know, there was a terrific feeling of one big family.
And going back to the invasion theme, you know, after things began to pick up in the war, after El Alamein and
yes.
the Stalingrad victory, did it? You still carried on these activities, expecting invasion, did you?
Apparently, I'd gone into the WAF just almost when the war was almost finished. I was a radar operator. And they were stood down sometime then. But I never knew the date, because I never knew until long after I was married that we had in fact been stood down.
But was it still taken seriously, the work you were all doing, you know, expecting that perhaps the Germans might come in 43 and 44?
Oh, I think it was right up until the time they realised there was no threat of invasion, after we invaded the continent, I suppose, that they realised, you know, we were no longer needed. And
did you yourself use the radio?
On one or two occasions, yes.
And was it quite a simple thing to operate?
Yes, it was just a question of knowing the right buttons. But that sort of thing, you know, seemed to come naturally to me, because with the radar, I found I picked it up. I was on the old CH stations, which were being superseded at the time. But we had a 200-mile range, which the more modern stations only had about 50 miles. And so we could see planes coming from much further away, and the warning could go out. I got so that I could recognise the German planes by the... because they had this funny little wiggly trace that went across And I could tell the German planes from the shape and colour of the thing. And I could tell them, when they were sort of about 150 miles, I could say, it's a German raid coming in. And
where were you stationed then?
Most of my time I spent at Stoke Holy Cross, just outside Norwich.
And I imagine your pre-